Support for KNKX and Sound Effect comes from WSECU, reminding listeners that WSECU is a local community credit union. WSECU welcomes everyone in the state of Washington who embraces the values of giving, sharing, and supporting local communities. More information can be found at WSECU.org.
Check, 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 1, 2. Can I just ask your name and I guess where you live?
Oh, yeah. I live in the U District. My name's Megan.
This is Sound Effect contributor Luke Bremer talking to people about their first email or online username.
It was like in the sixth grade, and it was bananas4u@att.net. And everyone thought it meant like I had a crush on someone, like I'm going bananas for you, but it was more like I'm offering you bananas. That was like.
Why do you think you picked that? Was there a certain reason?
I don't know. I really like bananas at the time.
Hi, you're listening to Sound Effect on KNKX 88.5 FM. I'm Jennifer Wing, and for a certain generation, you know, those millennials, they came of age on the internet. They created identities in this whole new transformative space at an age when first name, last name, at server was just boring. And so you got things like this.
I think it was Puggle Muggle because I was obsessed with pugs and Harry Potter at the time.
Bad Seed 352. I think I was like 16 or something like that, and I don't know.
And one of my first usernames was I Poop on Your Mom.
It was Frosty Cherry 7. I really like cherries. My favorite number was 7, and I guess they were frosty because I'm always cold.
Sup Boy, SUPBOY. So it's like, what's up, boy, like condensed.
Why do you think you picked that name?
Because of like I like to say what's up a lot.
I mean, did you keep using that name for a while, and did a lot of people like keep referring to you as that name?
Oh no, I grew out of it once I got into middle school.
So today on Sound Effect, we're telling stories of virtual reality. What happens when real life meets technology? When you're a kid or teen encountering the internet for the first time, it means silly online usernames like evilhockeyqueen@yahoo.com. And by the way, that's a real email KNKX member relations manager Emily Fahey had in high school, and she was a bit of a field hockey fanatic. You wouldn't want to mess with her. But we'll also hear how a friendship built on Twitter couldn't survive off the internet. And we'll put on actual VR headsets to learn about the possibilities of a budding industry. Plus, we'll hear what happens when your neighborhood gets the reality TV treatment. That and more here on Sound Effect. You're listening to Sound Effect. I'm Jennifer Wing, and today we're talking virtual reality. And virtual reality done well is a totally immersive experience. The rest of the real world is blocked out. It's really the ultimate distraction. A couple of researchers in Seattle see the potential in distraction and are using it to treat people experiencing severe pain. And I have to tell you that this involves snowmen throwing snowballs and Paul Simon's Graceland. But before we get to that, let's meet Kat Lincecum from Palmer, Alaska. Kat is on the 8th floor at Harborview Medical Center in Seattle. She's stretched out in bed. Her arms are out to the side. She's had surgery the day before, a skin graft, and she has burns over 20% of her body.
We were having a bonfire and it exploded and got the whole front side of me horribly burned.
So you wake up here. What was the pain like?
It was excruciating. I was in an extreme amount of pain. I had burns all the way down from my ankles all the way up my legs, my stomach, my chest, my neck, above and below my eyelids, my arms. It's a pain that no matter what you really do, you can't get away from it.
One of the things that makes a bad burn so nasty is that in order to prevent one from becoming infected, the wound has to be scrubbed and scraped. The skin has to be stretched so that as it heals, it doesn't get tight. People can be maimed permanently if scar tissue isn't stretched as the skin heals. And it's during these treatments or wound care sessions that the pain is often the worst for people like Kat.
We did so much cleaning and scraping on it that there were a couple of times I let out a couple of moans because I'm not going to kid you. It hurts like hell, big time. And when you come out from under all of that, like the next day, I hurt just as bad as I did the day that the fire took place.
Sometimes patients will undergo anesthesia to get them through wound care. The pain can be that intense, and morphine's often involved. And even though you still feel the pain, morphine makes you not really care that it's there. For some of Kat's wound care sessions, virtual reality goggles, similar to the ones that you'd use for snorkeling but smaller, they go on her face. And then Kat leaves the real world behind and enters Snow World. Snow World is a virtual world of ice and, well, snow. It's designed to be far removed from fire, anything else that's hot and could cause a burn. Players toss snowballs at snowmen and penguins while listening to Paul Simon's Graceland. When Kat plays the game, as nurses scrub her burns clean, she says her stress level actually drops.
The more you focused on the game part of the virtual reality, and you literally kind of step outside of your body.
The Mississippi Delta was shining like a national guitar.
But that's literally what you're doing, and your mind is no longer focused on all that pain.
I'm on the Graceland.
To explain how all of this is possible, we have to meet Dr. Hunter Hoffman. He's a researcher at the Virtual Reality Center at the University of Washington. Dr. Hoffman has been involved with the development of virtual reality since the early 1990s. And back then, he was developing VR programs that could be used in schools.
One of the things I noticed that was key later was, you know, when the kids were in the virtual world, they were completely gone from the real world. So if you tried to get them to, if you tried to talk to them, it was really hard because they were like gone.
Their brains were fully occupied. They were completely distracted. Dr. Hoffman made a mental note of this, and he went on to explore the different ways that virtual reality could help people. He cured a woman's debilitating fear of spiders using VR. And then he got wind of what another colleague was doing with hypnotherapy to treat the horrible pain experienced by burn victims.
I said, how does hypnosis reduce patients' pain? He said, we don't fully understand how it works. It looks like distraction may be playing part of the role of why hypnosis is effective. And I said, distraction, we should try this. Virtual reality is extraordinarily distracting. We should use that. My friend introduced me to Dave Patterson, and Patterson and I have been collaborating for almost 20 years now.
Dr. Hunter came up with the idea for Snow World, and he and Dr. Patterson have been using it with great success on burn victims to treat their pain. You see, processing pain, it requires attention from the brain. And if you can distract the brain by creating that out-of-body experience that Kat was describing, pain and discomfort can be greatly reduced. Dr. Patterson said he didn't know it at the time, but when he was a kid, he asked his father a question that touched on the very research he's doing today.
Yes, I remember fishing with my father when I was really young, and we would fish up in Wisconsin. And I was asking about wasp stings and fishing for muskie. And I asked my dad, I said, if you had a big muskie on the hook, and you were stung by a bee, what would you feel? And he said, I wouldn't even notice it.
Because his brain would be totally distracted by the fish on the end of his line. Dr. Patterson and Dr. Hoffman know virtual reality is lowering pain because they've done patient surveys and brain imaging. Areas of the brain that normally light up like a Christmas tree because of pain are noticeably dim when VR is involved. So back to Snow World. Why Graceland? Paul Simon, it turns out, he's a pretty altruistic guy. He started a charity in New York that provides healthcare to kids who are living in poverty. And he heard about the work happening at the lab at UW and stopped by while he was in town for a concert to check it out.
And he was particularly smitten by Snow World.
Paul Simon apparently said that what Snow World needed was music. His music. Dr. Hoffman remembers that Paul Simon specifically recommended the song Graceland.
In some ways, you know, because it's African music, it sort of got a beach, you know, ocean. So it doesn't necessarily match the environment, but it certainly has a very positive kind of vibe to it. And it draws you in whether you like it or not. It's very attention grabbing.
Snow World is getting an upgrade. On this day, Dr. Hoffman is letting Kat, the patient we met earlier from Palmer, Alaska, try out Snow Canyon. Instead of goggles being placed on her face, this new system uses a headset.
So this is a new version that we wanted to try out.
It's a little challenging because one of Kat's ears is burned.
Can we pull that out just a little bit?
Yeah.
As you slide it down? I think that's all I'd have to do.
Okay, we can, this one's cool because you can move your head around.
Oh, well, that's awesome.
After a few adjustments, she's in the new world of Snow Canyon. It's very similar to Snow World, but a little more realistic looking.
Kat, what do you see?
Oh, there's penguins and like wolves and snowmen, and they're on the sides of these cliffs.
For a brief bit of time, Kat is flying through a canyon, tossing snowballs at snowmen, penguins, and now wolves. But this early prototype, it doesn't use Graceland.
The only part is you got to get rid of that do, re, mi, fa, sol, la, ti, da. You need better background music. Other than that, that thing is perfect.
Dr. Hoffman is telling patients not to worry, but that Paul Simon's music will be added soon. If you're just tuning in, you're listening to Sound Effect on KNKX 88.5 FM. I'm Jennifer Wing, and today's theme is virtual reality. What happens when the real world meets technology, like when we play video games? And one of the best parts about playing video games is losing yourself inside whatever world they take place in. Maybe you're a plumber tasked with saving a princess from a great sorcerer, or you could be an agent with the British Secret Service trying to save the world from Spectre. But if you're Dima Verovka and Sean Vesey, the objective is a little different. The games they make are all about how you connect with the world around you. These two created the gaming company Kalabi Studios, focused on education and celebrating cultures that we often don't really interact with. And they call these world culture games. And if that doesn't sound as sexy as playing a secret agent, you'd be surprised. 88.5's Ariel Van Cleave recently spent some time in their offices in Redmond to talk about their latest venture called The Forest Song.
So before I get too far along here, let me give you a little bit of background about these guys. Verovka and Vesey have decades of combined experience in making what you'd consider traditional video games. Think of the ones where you're holding a gun or raiding tombs. They used to make those. And as you might assume, especially if you've ever tried prying a controller out of a kid's or, let's be honest, even an adult's hands, the industry brings in an insane amount of money. Last year, total revenues hit an all-time high of $23.5 billion with a B dollars, and that was just in the U.S. But even with all this wild popularity and the money that goes along with it, Vesey says he and Verovka were just not happy.
Both of us have young families, and so as game developers, as we started to become parents, realizing that the work that we do, we wanted to be able to bring it home and enrich the lives of our kids and people all around. And so we're trying to figure out how can we practice our craft, the thing that we know how to do, but do it in a way that was sort of socially responsible and enriching.
Okay, so socially responsible and enriching. Video games. You don't really put those words all together, like, ever. But Vesey says a chance meeting with the president of the Cook Inlet Tribal Council in Alaska, a woman named Gloria O'Neill, actually paved the way for them to do the kind of, quote, socially responsible gaming they were looking for.
She really approached us and said, I want to connect with the youth in my culture, and we think that games are the way to do it. That's what they're playing. We want to meet them at that where they are, and we think actually that if we make something great, that we could show what really Alaska Native culture is about to this whole new audience.
Basically, O'Neill looked around, realized these kids were enamored with games, and figured this would be the best way to actually meet them on their own turf. Vessi and Verovka looked into it, ran the numbers, but then Vessi tells the tribal council, no, it just doesn't add up. It's too expensive. It'll take too long.
But they were very persistent, and I think they won us over, both in terms of their perseverance and their values, and we slowly began to develop trust with them. And that whole process, the project itself, was a learning experience for us. And it showed us that there was another way to do games.
And what came out of this whole process is this game called Never Alone. And as you can hear, it's narrated in an entirely different language called Inupiaq. When the game starts, we're told a story about a young girl who lived in a small village. Soon it starts snowing, and it snows, and snows, and snows. The villagers can't hunt. They face starvation. So the little girl sets out to find the source of the eternal blizzard. As the gamer, you play as the girl, or an Arctic fox. It's a very old Inupiaq story, and to learn it, Verovka says he and Vessi had to spend a lot of time in the field.
We believe that to make a game about a specific culture, about people, the right way to do it is actually to go there and immerse yourself in the culture, meet with people, share food with them.
All of this is so completely different from what you'd expect from traditional game developers, right? Like, you probably picture a bunch of dudes sitting in cubicles writing code for like 10 hours a day. But these two got outdoors. They did their homework to make this game. They traveled to Barrow, Alaska, right at the very tippy top of the state, and spent time with Inupiaq elders, storytellers, community members. They were so immersed in their authentic experience that at one point, Verovka says they found themselves on the shores of the Beaufort Sea, helping the villagers pull a whale out of the water. Seriously.
It was a very spiritual, very interesting experience, kind of a celebrating, but at the same time inviting that whale to them. And it's everybody's there. It's 2 o'clock in the morning, kids, elders, of course, captain, his crew, his wife is cooking right there. So it was like a unforgettable experience for us.
And that has to inform the game then, like seeing that and being part of that.
Yeah, for us, it was a real privilege to then try to take all those things that we learned and create a game experience. So when players play, they don't only have fun, but they walk away enriched, seeing the world in a new way, and hopefully learning a little bit about themselves in the process.
So they released this game, and it does really well. Everybody loves it. The thing gets rave reviews, wins awards, the community it's based on is thrilled. Vessi and Verovka couldn't be happier, so they're like, okay, let's do this again. The game they're working on now is called The Forest Song, and this one is especially important to Verovka. He grew up in Ukraine, but back then it was part of the Soviet Union. He mainly spoke Russian, and he wasn't really connected to Ukrainian culture in a meaningful way. As it turns out, Verovka's not alone. He says he's part of a lost generation who missed out on connecting with Ukrainian traditions and mythology, but now he's making this game and connecting the dots. Verovka and Vessi are using the same process from the first game, researching, talking with experts, but most importantly, taking trips to villages to talk to the actual people who live there.
To me, going into that village, that's the source of this like wealth of Ukrainian culture. These people who live in the villages, they preserve that culture. They have all these beautiful stories to tell, and they still practice the traditions and learning all that. It is emotional because I felt like I would never do that. But now going there and listening directly from these people, now the picture kind of comes together.
And Verovka and Vessi have definitely gone heavy on tradition for this game. The Forest Song is based on a drama of the same name. It focuses on a forest nymph named Mavka, who falls in love with a mortal, a guy called Lukish. The love between Mavka and Lukish causes a clash between the natural world and the world of humans. So, of course, things do not go well.
And so the beginning of the demo starts off with Lukas waking up in a rather familiar place. It turns out it's the house of his mother. And he wakes up to his astonishment. Everything is as he remembered it in that day. And he leaves his mother's house and quickly finds that she's sitting beneath an oak tree. And she calls to him.
Ой, святе, їж ти, їж. Нарешті, вийшов на світ Божий.
Lukas's mother tells him she needs his help making flour for a very special traditional wedding bread. The problem is the windmill isn't working, so your objective is to repair it. And again, I know, windmills, flour, bread doesn't scream sexy, but I gotta say, it's really satisfying when you actually repair the windmill and grind the grain. But it's not just that. This game is crazy beautiful. The colors are so lush. There are purples, greens, yellows. The detail is amazing. It's like you could actually reach out and touch the tall grass in the fields. This story, The Forest Song, was written more than 100 years ago by Lesa Ukrainka, and it's beloved by Ukrainians, like beloved. It's been the inspiration for ballets and songs. It was even made into a movie in the 80s.
The Forest Song talks about our relationship to nature, our responsibility to nature, and the consequences of what happens when we turn our back on that responsibility. And I can't think of a more timely theme.
At the moment, especially what's going on in Ukraine right now, where it's like it's a war, it's a lot of people talking about all these like dark things. People getting tired of that simply. And a game like that is just the window to something really good, to something that can make the highlight of the day.
So it's not just about fixing windmills. This is important. They're saying that this game can help shed a positive light on a region that is so synonymous with war and upheaval. With the Forest Song, they get a chance to celebrate Ukrainian culture. There are these videos embedded into the game explaining what certain traditions mean, why they're important. There are interviews with elders sharing stories. Plus, there's this really beautiful traditional music they feature that breaks your heart.
Зеленая Дібра.
We're getting stronger when we understand who we are. We understand our roots. You know, it's almost like if you wanted to learn something about Alaska Native people or this particular region in Ukraine, we believe like even 10 years from now, you can always go and play and experience kind of like you will open the book.
That story from 88.5's Ariel Van Cleve.
So, all right.
Do you see like that big kind of glass floor?
You're tuned to Sound Effect here on 88.5 KNKX. I'm Jennifer Wing. So what you're hearing right now is myself and sound effect producer Kevin Kniestad in one of our recording studios here at the station with self-described sound wizard Scott Colburn.
Okay. I think I'm in the midst of like the birth of a star. Here, Kevin.
And if it sounds like I was on another planet, well, I kind of was. Kevin and I were wearing high-tech virtual reality goggles, and we're trying to navigate our way around a spaceship.
Oh, God. Okay. I almost fell into outer space. That was really scary. Wow, that's... Oh, wow.
Scott Colburn brought in the goggles for us to try out, and he's basically spent his entire adult life working in the audio business. In the past, he's been a music producer for bands like Arcade Fire, Animal Collective, and Mudhoney. He's done the audio for films, and his current job is as a sound designer at Microsoft. Colburn is working on their virtual and augmented reality projects, and his goal is to get the audio experience of virtual reality to sound just as real as the visual part of it, something that he was inspired to do after going to a local film festival.
And I had no idea what a VR film festival was going to be like. I just imagined it was like you see those classic photos of people with the 3D glasses on, that we'd all be sitting and wearing these goggles. What it really was that we're in a big room in an event space, and you stand in line, and you come up, and you decide what genre of film you want to see, documentaries. And you go into the documentary line, and there's four different options that you choose from, and they say, which one would you like to see? And you point at one. They put the gear VR on you, and then you sit there in a chair, and you watch this documentary for like 3 minutes or something like that. So I saw a documentary that was a couple Native American ladies dancing in a desert during sunset. It was beautiful. Very, very well shot. Dancing, and I hear this drum playing and everything, and they're standing right in front of me, and it was just really, really cool. And then I started to look around, and I realized that the drumming that was happening, which was happening just on the left and right side of my head, stereo, they were behind me. But I didn't have a sense that they were behind me. They just were part of the scene, and I didn't know that they were there until I actually turned around and saw that they were there. And I was like, well, that just disconnected me from that space. Why don't they sound like they're from behind me? The answer is that the technology is new enough that nobody knows really anything. It's very, very Wild West. And since I'm audio-centric, I went out on a mission to like look at spatial audio plugins that can work in game engines to find out which one of these work the best.
An audio plugin, is this a piece of technology that processes sound in a certain way?
Exactly.
So just so I'm clear in describing it, in a way you want the sound, the thing that's making the sound, the object, the person, the bird, the crow, making the sound, you want that sound to stick with that creature or that thing and stay with that entity as you move around in the virtual world.
And as it moves. What these plugins are allowing game makers or just experience makers for virtual reality is to represent reality with that 50% experience of the audio really working, and it sells that experience. Like I said, with the Native American dancers, if that drum was behind me, then that experience would have been sold to me, because it's like I look around, I see the drummers, and I realize they're behind me, and I look at them, and then all of a sudden they're in front of me. Because they weren't, I got popped out of the experience. I didn't feel like I was there anymore because it didn't represent reality. It did visually, but it didn't represent reality in an audio way.
So with virtual reality and augmented reality, the experience of being immersed in these worlds, it's growing all the time. It's really taking us to places that we've never, we were just walking through space. And again, could you explain why is the audio so important?
Well, the visuals are stunning. And there's a lot of people that are really into games, and they don't want to hear the sound. They get bored by the sound, or it's just overwhelming to them, or they might be made nervous by too much sound. And there's nothing wrong with that. However, for virtual reality to work, because what we're doing is we're recreating reality and we're trying to make it as perfect as possible, it's like unless you walk around with earplugs in, you get audio all the time with everything that you do. And so it's important to have the audio there to be immersed in the space.
What's the most amazing audio experience you have had with in the world of augmented or virtual reality?
A guy played me a music recording. It was a standard music recording that he had rechanneled and remixed for, and I want to call it VR because there was no visual to it. It's just audio. but you know, the singer was in front of me, and you could go and walk closer to the singer and be very close to him, and the music would kind of disappear a little bit, and you could go closer to the acoustic guitar, and he goes, go over by the bass, go over by the bass. And I got to the bass, and it was like, that's almost all I could hear was the bass. And then I got down on the floor where the bass cabinet would be, where the speaker would be, and I put my head right next to the speaker, and I swear, air was moving. I could hear the crackle of the speaker as it was vibrating, and I swear, like, I could feel this air moving past my face. And I don't, and I know that that was not happening, but I think the sound was so realistic that it was like, I've had my head in front of a speaker that's been playing, and I know what kind of air is moving, and this is what I expect to experience. And so the audio was so good that it made me feel that, even though it wasn't there.
Another thing comes to mind with the potential with the audio, if you're in a VR world, something as simple as the game Marco Polo.
Right.
Right? I mean, yeah. that would work.
It would work. And, you know, like I've mentioned that I work at Microsoft, and I'm working specifically on an app that's called ActionGram. And when I first started there, I was just looking at the assets that were created originally. So I brought out a unicorn, and I put it on my desk, and this a hologram would run. I started it, and the unicorn ran straight through my head, and I turned around to look at where it went, and, you know, and it ran maybe like 10 feet away, it seemed. Well, I'm trying to get the unicorn like back into my office because he's like 10 feet away from me now, and I start to walk towards him, and I realize that I'm at the wall of my office. I can't go any further. So I go out of my office and like start slightly down the hall. And then it's still not there. It's like I'm walking further and further and further. The next thing I know, it's like I'm in the bathroom, and that's where the unicorn is. And, you know, the listening audience will appreciate that we're sitting there tapping with our fingers in the air. This is how you operate it. And so I'm walking in the bathroom. There's somebody in there, and I'm like tapping this thing, and I've got a HoloLens on. And he's like kind of looking at me funny. Even though we're all working on HoloLens, it's still disconcerting to see people walking around tapping in the air because you don't know what they're seeing.
Yeah, it looks like you're snapping your fingers, but you're not. Yeah.
Exactly, yeah. And I couldn't get it to come back with me. So I walk back into the office and I go, Alex, the unicorn's stuck in the bathroom and I don't know how to get it out. So I caused somebody some real turmoil because I didn't understand the app at that time.
Yeah. Did you explain that you were chasing a unicorn to the person going to the bathroom?
Yeah, just trying to get a unicorn. Don't worry about it.
And were you able to track the unicorn down because you could hear it or because you could see it and hear it?
It wasn't making sound at that point, but when it ran through my head, it did sound like it ran through my head, and then I turned around and it got quieter as it ran away.
Next time, bring a carrot.
Yeah, that'll get it back.
Yeah.
Because unicorns are real.
Yeah, well, yeah, they're endangered, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, Scott Coburn, thank you so much for joining us today and bringing us into this virtual sound-rich world that you are creating.
Thank you.
Scott Coburn is a sound designer at Microsoft and works on their virtual and augmented reality projects. If you're just joining us, you're tuned to Sound Effect on KNKX 88.5 FM, and I'm Jennifer Wing. And today we're talking about virtual reality, what happens when our real lives meet the internet and other types of technology. And we now turn to a story about some people who see the internet as a vital part of their lives, you know, like all of us. Bill Crayer checks his Twitter feed constantly. For him, the stakes are a bit higher when it comes to communication. Bill lives on the streets, and he's done so on and off for years. Online, he's made really good friends, so much so that at times, Twitter has become his lifeline. Sound Effect contributor Sarah Lerner has the story.
Bill is arriving to the Seattle Public Library downtown. Boy. He drops his yellow 5-gallon bucket on the floor. It's like an extra suitcase for him. It's full of his important things. Like today, mostly food from the grocery outlet nearby.
I always try to get the end one because of my stuff.
I'm tagging along on Bill's daily trip to the library. He's psyched to get a computer at the end of a row, so there's room for his things to spill onto the walkway.
This is always like, this row is always full.
Oh, really? So this is like a score?
Yes.
He sets his backpack down, too.
Oops. Almost put in my old handle. Pete Crager 817 before I became Pete Crager 12th man. I had to make it something Seahawks related. What's going on, Tweeps? Huh? 81 notifications.
So if you're not a big Twitter user, just FYI, BCrayer 12th man is his handle, and 81 notifications is a lot.
Joy liked your tweets. Goody goody gumdrops. 13-6 go M's. 10 other likes. Yes, I talk to myself. I have people I regularly just kick it with. See, Mommy Unit, Irish Car Bomb 21, Norbcam.
After Bill checks his Twitter for a bit at the library computers, we sit down to talk some more.
Oh yeah, you didn't see this.
Yeah, it's like bright red all around your eyeball.
Uh-huh. That's from where that dude soccer punched me.
Oh yeah.
He's like, give me your phone. I pulled out my knife and said, uh-uh. And he took off.
Bill has lots of stories like these. Attacks, visits to the hospital, his things being stolen. His home at the moment is a cement stoop in front of a team sports store by Safeco Field. And this is not something he tries to hide, online or anywhere.
Friends of mine joke about it. Residentially deprived, or residentially impaired.
Bill says Twitter actually makes life easier.
It's, for lack of a better term, escapism. And a lot of my followers say some really funny stuff.
First and foremost, Bill tweets about the Seahawks and the Mariners. But it's also about his favorite bands, his TV shows. Always he's connecting with fellow superfans.
And like I said, I'm the only homeless dude I know that uses Twitter.
Really?
Yeah. Like, what good is that for?
Bill is such an open book. He tells all. And that's how he is on Twitter, too, which means he does not always stick to the fun stuff.
Like, dude, if it wasn't for Twitter, I wouldn't be in Seattle. Got me a bus ticket here. Hello.
A guy he still hasn't met, in person anyway, got him a ride all the way from the Midwest to Seattle.
Started hitchhiking here. Got to Indianapolis. Stuck there 25 days. Could not get a ride out. 8 days later, my stuff got stolen. I walk to Illinois. 16 miles.
And Bill was tweeting the entire time.
I was following Bill's travels to the Midwest via Twitter. And at the time, I didn't know that he was hitchhiking.
Enter
Martin Hodes,
a Gig Harbor-based traveling salesman, also known as
NFC West Seahawk.
He and Bill were among a crowd united first by the Seahawks.
He started going on his own little tangents and talking about where he was and that he's really cold and he's really tired and he was really hungry. So I started just messaging him. I said, Bill, where are you? Why are you cold?
Bill explained, and they continued to message each other. And then
I get to Marshall, and Martin tweets me, says, can you get to Effingham? I'm like, yeah, it's 3 exits away. Why? There's a bus ticket waiting for you. What? A what?
Bill was stranded and tweeting about it. This is a prime opportunity for a stranger to troll him, to pounce and send hateful messages. But that's not what happened.
He would just see my name, I'd see his name, right? And so we're just fellow Twitter followers. He was tweeting a lot of times about the music that he was listening to. I come from the old school, from the 70s, hard rock and roll, Led Zeppelin, Rolling Stones, and that's what he was listening to. And so I had that immediate connection with him.
At first, Martin still had no idea Bill was living on the streets. He just knew he was hitchhiking.
When he got back to Seattle, other people had made promises to him for a place for him to stay. And none of those promises came out. I gave him some hints on where to go within an area I knew so that he didn't have to live in a tent.
Weeks went by. Martin kept giving Bill information, tips. He bought him a card with $10 on it for Subway sandwiches.
After that point, I found that Bill was not willing to help himself. And so that's where I kind of washed my hands of helping him financially.
How did you get that conclusion that he wasn't really helping himself?
When he wasn't taking any of my advice on where to go and how to get a job, clean up, shave, cut your hair, take a shower. The Goodwill gives away free clothes.
When I talked to Bill at the library, he didn't tell me anything about this, about how Martin had given him support when he got to Seattle, how Martin had tried to help him, not just with one bus ticket that one time. Even back on the road, Martin had bought Bill and his fellow travelers pizzas when the bus line stranded them for 12 hours. But their friendship didn't last. I wanted Bill to have a chance to explain it too. We met up again in Soto near the stadiums. I told him what Martin said.
Well, one, I'm a homeless, convicted felon with horrible dental work. Would you hire me? Probably not, especially not for a fast food place.
Bill says his ex-girlfriend wrongly accused him of domestic violence without any evidence, and he served 9 months.
I mean, most of my jobs the last 3 years have been under the table, doing yard work, concrete, drywall. What do I have to put on a job application? I mean, I'm sleeping on the porch of a business. How's anybody gonna hire me? They're picky.
Does it bother you that he said, like, well, Bill's not getting a job and going to work at McDonald's?
No.
But it doesn't make you feel any different about Martin that he said
no.
that?
Mm-mm.
Or any less, like, appreciative that he did that stuff?
No, not at all.
Bill is honest about his biggest roadblock. He showed me his hand before we parted. It was shaking. He asked if I had $2 so we could get a beer. He says drinking is like medicine.
What's it like when you don't get a drink?
It's getting nauseous, and like you saw, I got the shakes. And then my sinuses start going haywire. I've been thinking about going into treatment really seriously, especially with winter coming.
Online, at BeCrare 12th Man and at NFC West Seahawk were Twitter buddies, fans exchanging friendly banter. But in the real world, Bill and Martin didn't make it.
Given what you know now about Bill, do you regret helping him out?
Oh, no. No. He was very, very cold. It was below 20 degrees where he was. I couldn't see somebody underneath a bridge in the middle of wintertime tweeting about a situation, so I helped him out. That was my choice.
Bill told me his parents drank a lot. He says he was 12 when he got drunk for the first time. He stayed home alone on New Year's Eve, but his mom gave him a six-pack of Michelob before she went out. I ask him if that's why things turned out this way.
I will be the first to admit my life is the way it is, mainly because of me.
He says, what do I owe you? And I says, Bill, the only thing you ever owe me is that you can never unfollow me on Twitter.
That story from sound effect contributor Sarah Lerner. You can follow her on Twitter at SJ Lerner. Thanks for joining us. You're listening to Sound Effect on KNKX 88.5 FM. I'm Jennifer Wing, and today we're telling stories of virtual reality. And what is a more distorted version of real life than reality television? MTV's long-running reality show The Real World returned to Seattle this past summer to film a new cast of 20-somethings, and local artist Derek Erdman found his own reality turned upside down for a bit. Just a heads up that the segment does include some sensitive language.
MTV's Real World was recently in Seattle for its 32nd season, much to the dismay of most of my friends. The new cast was picked to live in the lively neighborhood of Capitol Hill, a few blocks from my apartment. Capitol Hill shares the similar story of many other great American neighborhoods. It was once a cool destination full of art galleries, queer folks, record stores, and cheap rents. And it's now been turned into the trendy, shiny, fancy social hub for young Amazon employees with expensive juice restaurants. It's not uncommon for people to live in apartments, which are 14 by 14 foot rooms with shared kitchens for $1,200 a month. I honestly don't care about that. I like expensive juice. But the real world actors being in Capitol Hill had everybody up in arms. The cast seemed to represent everything that had turned the once great Mecca into a place for woo girls to barf limeritas into the street all night long. It was pretty great to watch people interact with the actors, who were in the neighborhood until September. Facebook groups popped up tracking the cast members' every move. But none of this seemed at all like the real world to me until my friend Claire was approached at a bar that she works at by one of the cast members. After talking for a couple minutes, he gave Claire his number with the insinuation that he was looking to hook up. Let's call him Campbell. Claire found this all to be very funny and posted his number in one of the groups following the real world cast. I called to see if it was real. It rang and went to voicemail. I figured it could be his number, but who cares? So I hung up without leaving a message. 1 minute later, he called me back. In my excitement, I'd forgotten to star 67. I didn't know what to do, so I answered, "Safeway on Lincoln." Side note, I have a Chicago area code, though there are no Safeways there.
Yeah, who is this?
This is the Safeway on Lincoln.
This is the Safeway?
Yes, sir. How can I help you?
Somebody just called me from this number.
That could have been any of our departments, sir.
This is a Safeway in Chicago?
Yes, sir. On Lincoln.
What's your name?
Todd.
Todd what?
Todd Milton.
That sounds like you just made that name up.
It's the name I was given at birth, sir.
Well, your name sounds like...
Sir, I'm sorry if somebody called you from this number on accident.
See, that's the thing. I don't think this was an accident. I think my number has been leaked on the internet.
I could transfer to some other departments to see if they called you.
Okay, transfer me.
Okay, one second. Pharmacy.
Yo, you didn't transfer me. This is the same dude, Todd Milton.
Sorry, sir, this is the pharmacy.
Yo, you sound like a lame.
Sorry, sir, this is the pharmacy.
No, you're the same guy as before, and you gave me a fake name. Can I talk to your manager?
There isn't a manager on duty, sir.
Well, then let me talk to your superior.
Sorry, sir, the only other people at the store at the same level as me.
Well, then let me talk to anyone else.
Okay, I can transfer you to produce.
Fine, I'll take the produce department.
Okay, one second. Produce.
See, you didn't transfer me. You're the same person. Listen, this is some fake and I want you to know that I'm from Chicago, and I'm going to be coming back there, and I'm going to look for you at Safeway. I got your number.
I'll be happy to serve you when you're here, sir. Back at the real world loft, and it's always a loft, Campbell and his roommates and the producers probably Googled my number, which led to my website and street address. It's all easily available. It's 1605 East Madison. Campbell called me back 2 minutes later. Safeway on Lincoln.
Yo, this is Derek Edelman. Your name sounds I know your address, too.
Sir, this is still the Safeway on Lincoln.
Yo, I'm gonna come find you. I know where you are.
Sir, we have locations all over the city. Some are 24 hours.
Look out for me. I'll find you.
Somewhere in the middle of all of that, Campbell called Claire and threatened to report her to the authorities and to have her arrested for leaking his number. In the days after our exchange, I never saw Campbell outside my apartment, but I kept looking. To be honest, I was hoping to be written into this season's storyline, the 42-year-old man constantly calling to demand that he's the Safeway on Lincoln, willing to transfer anybody to any department. Eventually, Campbell will catch me running for the bus on my way to work and call me a f*** and pound his fists into my face, 3 or 4 of my teeth snapping off of my skull before I hit the sidewalk. I'll stand up to the forces of change for all the Capitol Hill memories, the independent barbershops, the occult bookstores, and the mom-and-pop mini-marts, lying there on Madison Street in a pool of my own blood, my teeth looking like spilled chiclets. I'll barely be able to get out the words, but eventually they'll come. Take that, real world.
That essay from Seattle artist Derek Erdman. It originally appeared in the magazine Lucky Peach. Sound effect contributor Arwin Nix played the role of the real world cast member. That does it for the show this week. Sound effect comes to you from producers Kevin Kniestad and Allie Ferguson. Contributions this week come from Ariel Van Cleve, Sarah Lerner, Abe Beeson, and Luke Brummer, and Arwin Nix. We get web help from Dave Nagaris. Aaron Hennessy is our executive producer. You can find our podcast on iTunes, and you can also find Sound Effect on the NPR One app. And if you have any feedback or maybe there's a story you'd like to share, you can send us an email to soundeffect@knkx.org. We'll be back next week when our theme is eavesdropping.
I started thinking that they didn't really sound like raindrops anymore. Now they started to sound like something popping. It wasn't really like a campfire because it was just more like pop, 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 pop.
I'm Jennifer Wing, and this is 88.5 KNKX.